is Penn Jillette with Michael Godeau on a Monday. As you know, the Aristocrats is playing on HBO. And so far on this show, we have had Lisa Lampanelli, Howie Mandel, David Brenner, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Provenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, Trey Parker, and now one of the comics I've known the longest, but we never bothered to become friends. Just didn't have enough time or something. Or
we have things to do.
Yes, Lewis Black. Lewis Black is here, who is playing here in Vegas at the MGM through Wednesday night.
Through Wednesday night.
Have you played the MGM before?
No, this is the first week run I've had in a long time here.
Well, we've played that room lots of times.
Yeah.
It's such a really nice room. Now, when we had it, we insisted there be exactly 666 seats. But I believe the two that we taped off, just in honor of the of Lord Satan, those two seats have probably been opened up. So you're probably having to sell 668, but yeah, which is next door to the Beast. But, or maybe it's across the street from the Beast if it's 667. But it's a really good room to play.
Yeah.
A little wide. You want to keep moving. Keep ducking.
Really, it's wide?
Yeah, a little bit. Not too bad. But Carrot Top plays there, so you're going to kill.
Oh, that'll work out perfect.
Are you? You're thinner than last time I saw you. Are you trying to be thinner?
No, I didn't try. I don't know what it is. I think it's an illusion. I think people remember me as fat.
You know, I think that's true. I put on like 20 pounds. People are going to go, oh, you're a lot thinner now.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's when you see my face, you think there's a fat guy. So anything short of like, 600 pounds is he's lost some weight.
But it's also we do, I don't know if you hear this, but we do television. And so they always say, God, you look so much better in person. Yeah. And so I go, so why do I bother to do TV?
Exactly.
And so I think that's it, too, because we're seen on television. That adds 15 pounds.
It's also the competition on TV. You and I walk around Vegas. We're regular guys.
Yeah.
On TV, we're compared to people who are professionally good-looking.
Yes.
And with all due respect, sir, I think you're a very handsome man, and I do you in a second. But but in terms of professional good-looking, that's not where you got what you are.
No, we're never. We're not even in that ball. We got there by being odd. Really odd. It's like, really? They said that? You'll say that again? Out loud? In public? In front of people? Are you kidding me? Really? No, but that's the way we got there,
yeah.
Which is much better. But it leaves us being sort of fat.
Sort of fat and unpleasant looking. It's like Hollywood. The people that are every person that's the best looking kid in their high school goes there, then they're instantly, mediocre.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get to instantly mediocre, but we're working. But the advantage of that is when you go into the creep category, you end up having more longevity, because they think you're African-American. You know, Hollywood cannot decide how old African-Americans are, so they have 10 years longer on their career.
Oh, exactly.
When you're in the creep, the real creeps, you got like 20 years different.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of go, is Lewis Black too old? Who knows how old he is?
Yeah, and he's been around for so long. And then I'm also in that category of like, wow, it took him 240 years to make his presence known in the business. I get introduced sometimes as, and here he is, comedy legend. I go, what? How did I? I've been on the public view for about 5 years. Other people knew me. I mean, it's like they call somebody a legend who stayed around so long that they can't say, well, he's an idiot. Why did he keep going? They have to go, wow, he's still doing it. He's a legend.
Well, I also wonder if legend has a little bit of doesn't really exist quality.
Yeah.
Okay, can I have a leprechaun, a unicorn, and Lewis Black, ladies and gentlemen? The unicorn, his comeback isn't going to be for a little while.
Doesn't really exist.
You've kind of heard about him. You've kind of heard maybe someone saw Lewis Black in a bar once in Toronto, and they saw a unicorn once in a field that ran away. It's so legendary.
Sort of the angry guy. It's that guy who's sort of angry.
Well, they expect you to have been killed by now, perhaps.
Do you get? Are you part of the team that gets death threats?
No.
No, no one cares.
Do you get them?
Once in a while, a few. Trey Parker's the one that, racks them up.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, if you're really going to go after somebody who's doing a cartoon. There's where you want to really nail the guy.
Well,
you know, it's
that is a little less surreal now than it was a year ago.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's guys in Denmark who are scared because they
draw. That's true.
They're scared because they get blamed for drawing a cartoon they didn't draw.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how wacky that is.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. That, but it's amazing that I don't get. I get mostly. I don't know. Maybe I don't exist. You know, I throw this stuff out sometimes, and I just get kind of people irritated, or I get the kind of, you know, those people that are kind of just come up after a show. I know you know them well.
Yeah,
they just kind of stare.
Yeah.
And kind of like their tongue is just a little out of them, and they don't really, and they just look at you with that look. And you go, hi, and then like 30 seconds elapses, and they, hi.
And you're so ready for them to call you Mr. Lennon.
Yeah. Those are the ones that scare me more than anything else.
Now, do you still love doing stand-up?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so nice to hear that. I think with the exception of you, every person I know who's successful in stand-up is just dying to get out of it.
Really?
They want to do movies or sitcoms or something.
I've done some movies this year and stuff, but I can't not get away from it. I like, you know, it's like, look, it took me forever to get to the point where I have an audience,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you finally get the audience, I'm going to go, you know what? I'll see ya. It took 100 years to gather these people together. And it's fun now because it's, you know, as you probably guys have experienced, it's, you know, yeah, I know you've experienced because I've watched your work, you know. We're freer, you know, because you got people who are actually coming to see you.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, whereas you had to do everything for a long time, this is okay, I better say this, and then I got to say that, then mm-hmm. I better go to this joke. Now I can, you know, it's much looser. I'm much more relaxed than I've ever been. It's much more energizing.
Well, it also seems so true for you, and once again, like us, but backwards for everybody else. Everybody else, when they get a little bit of success, seems to go more middle of the road and more like toward what people want. Teller and I, as soon as we were filling 500 seats, we just went, well, I guess we've got to get a little weirder. You know what I mean? So you just, the stuff that you were kind of suppressing, to the point that now we're playing Vegas, which is supposed to be so much less hip than off-Broadway. You know, now we've been around forever. We're supposed to be mellowing. And the stuff we're doing on stage and the stuff we're saying at the Rio is much more out than we were on. And I've noticed that, you know, when I flip around the radio and hear your stuff, it seems like when I saw you at whatever that place was on 48th Street,
you were down in the cellar talking to four people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it seemed like you were then trying to find out, how can I get a broader audience?
Yeah.
And now that you've got a broader audience, you're doing everything you can to slap them around a bit.
No, it's exactly it. But that's really true that we do kind of. And it's also why, you know, as much as I'm going to, you know, want to do, a television show,
mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in part in just as much maintaining the stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still kind of, as long as I'm learning something from it,
mm-hmm.
as long as you go out there and there's something, you know, there's some real joy, because it's like, you know, the thing, it's that live performance. How do you beat that?
Yeah.
You can't beat it. No matter what else we do, that there's nothing like that live performance.
And there's also no way, at least for me, there's no way to understand TV. You go on TV, you go on Letterman or something, and they tell you, I don't know the ratings, but 10 million people, 8 million people are watching you.
Yeah.
And it still is the 200 people in the studio.
Yeah.
You know? And people go down the street and say they saw it. I believe that, and also over 1,000 people, becomes this kind of infinite. You know, we did one show at some weird, I don't even know why we were doing it, but we did a show for 12,000 people.
In Munich.
Yeah, Munich. It was some weird computer thing or something.
Yeah.
We were, I mean, the old George Bush was opening for us. He did a speech, and then it was us. And there were, you know, screens all the way back and that kind of stuff. And I stood on stage and realized I had never felt more alone. I had no sense of anybody else in the room with me, because the lights on you are blinding, the monitors are so loud you can hear yourself breathe, and you're just there alone. And I've really felt that you can't get a bigger audience than about 500, 600 people. That seems enormous to me.
Yeah, I think the one I feel is doing these theaters is like 1,500 to 1,800.
Yeah.
and that's it. And then, and there's certain theater, and a lot of it has to do with the theater, because there's certain theaters you walk into, and it's like stepping into a bathtub. There could be, there's some theaters you can have 2,800 people, and you feel like it's a room of 100.
Yeah.
And that's, it, that, but you're right in terms of that sense of it's.
And it's, the faces you can see, that kind of stuff. I mean, in terms of like jacking you to high heaven. You know, when you can see in some way a little bit of spill the faces of most of the people in the theater, then you just go, there's a lot of people listening to me. Now, I'm when Teller and I work, because of the magic, because of other stuff, I'm an incredible tight ass. I mean, I move my hands in the same place every time. How much stuff do you do on stage that's improvised, and how much is real tight?
I'd say this week it'll be, I'm trying to, because just the HBO special came out, so I'm literally converting my act as fast as I can. And I had, usually by the time I'm doing a special, or like, you know, whenever I get a special up or a CD up, by the time that thing goes out, I've really created the next act.
Mm-hmm.
But my schedule got so tight that I've got like 25% new, 75% I'm still kind of shifting through, and so I would say to this week it'll be, there'll be 25% of it will be completely off the cuff. I know it will be. I mean, usually it is like 80-20.
What are you going to be talking about?
Well, I think I'm going to talk about that that Homeland Security thing, the, that list of places that, they think that we should protect, you know, the thing, Indiana,
the
zoo. The petting zoo, that stuff. Because my theory is, and it really is, seemingly to reach more fruit every day, is we don't know what we're doing anymore. We've completely lost contact, with the ability. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's like we got to be toilet. We have to almost stop the whole country and start everybody over with toilet training. Because we are really, it's unbelievable. Everywhere you turn, you know, you come through that airport in LAX, and this is, it was, they're daubing a woman in a wheelchair who's so tight, so constricted her body that you wondered, you know, how are they going to get, you know, most people you see in a wheelchair, they can kind of get on. They were going to have to lift this woman up and put her in a chair on the plane. I could see that. Mm-hmm. And they're daubing her to take that, to test to see if she were a bomb. And you just, you kind of go, this is getting insane. Or the, or you watch Condoleezza Rice just say, I mean, I'm going to talk about that stuff too, because here's the intriguing thing of Lebanon to me, is that, first off, things seem to don't seem to happen in real time anymore. I mean, Hezbollah, they go, you know, this thing happens, and the first news I hear of it, because you really, you go, well, Hezbollah, and you haven't heard, when was the last time you heard that word, like immigration? All of a sudden, it's immigration. You haven't heard immigration in, like, in 5 years, all of a sudden, oh, boy, there are Mexicans all over the place! You know, you, all of a sudden, stuff, so they're going, Hezbollah, and you know, when they signed that treaty, those Hezbollahians, they were supposed to be out of there, and they go, well, you know, the one, why didn't you get them out of there? Why didn't, you know, if that was so important to all these countries, and then it's like they go, oh, well, it's like they forgot them. Like they were, you know, you were cleaning your apartment, and there was a box of stuff that you forgot, and somebody calls you up and go, you know, you left your sneakers here. you left your Hezbollah here. And you got it. And then I, this is where I find it in, I don't care what side people stand on, but the thing is us, just U.S. We're not going to tell the Israelis to stop bombing Beirut. When there are Americans there, if I was an American living in Beirut, I would file suit. I'm like, couldn't you just say, could you give us a few minutes to get the guys out? And then the Israelis are using American bombs. We're bombing ourselves! So that's the kind of upbeat, fun, you know, fun spin kind of comedy I'll be doing this week.
No juggling.
No, not this week. But I'll tell you, I'm trying to convert my act over into that. Not even just to take the edge off. I said, you know, because I've started after the HBO special came out, I was kind of working on my stuff. You know, you kind of start putting new stuff in, and it doesn't quite work. So I'm really talking about stuff that's kind of serious, and you better find a punchline. It's not there. So I'm telling my audience.
Hey, it may be World War III. Good night, everybody.
Exactly. So I'm kind of going to them now. I kind of go, you know, really, I'm trying to, look, I said, something has to give here. I can't. I said, I feel like my audience goes, you know, that was a lot of fun. I'm going to go home and kill myself. So I've started to add dopey stuff just to kind of bring them back. You know,
like, doing nose picking humor?
Yeah, not really, but stuff that news clippings of people who, you know, like the, there was a, you'll love this, the dwarf that was, it was, the headline of the piece that I read is Hippopotamus Eats Dwarf. That's the best.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's the best. What else do you need for a day? You know, that's, I don't need to read today Ceasefire and Jeopardy. See that Condoleezza Rice holding her head like, boy, oh, tough day.
A hippopotamus hit a dwarf. That's a good day.
That's a great day. And, you know, it's that thing we were talking about out there when you're talking about other people's suffering.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a lot easier when you got super suffering.
But
and you can't, you know, you can't put a face to the dwarf.
Yeah, imagine this. Imagine that someone that you loved, your high school buddy, calls up and he goes, you know, my brother, the little person. Yeah, my brother, you know, I loved him dearly. You know, we were 2 years apart and it meant everything. And I was his big brother in both sets. It was really beautiful. Well, hippopotamus ate him. That's where compassion is tested. You know, when you want to talk about, like, you know, Martin Luther King, you want to talk about, you know, Norman Borlaug, that's the test. You don't say, how many people can you save? You say, I'm going to tell you a story that broke my heart, and you're going to look in my eyes and not laugh.
Yeah.
I have a little brother. When I say little brother, he's a little person. It's a genetic thing. It just didn't go right. He's 4 foot two. And, of course, he works in the circus because we all do what we do. You know, you're an accountant. You're a leader of a country. And my little person puts a little nose on, you know, it has a red nose. And he's a hard-working man. A good-working man has a wife, little wife, a couple little kids. When I say little kids, I mean little kids. And he does this thing where he's kind of shot out of a cannon. It's really cute. This is his life, you know. And the other day, there's of course, animals, and he works in a circus, and there's a hippopotamus there, and shoot off a cannon, and the hippo ate him. Now, you look him in the eye. You look him in the eye, and you say to you, Jimmy Carter feeding people around the world. Are you going to laugh? Are you going to laugh? You're going to laugh, you bastard, you hating bastard. I also want to point out, just so you know, I hope this doesn't ruin your whole act, that's an urban myth, the dwarf.
I don't tell anybody.
Okay. It's on Snopes right now. It was on Snopes.
It's as long as I say it aloud, it's the truth.
Okay.
I don't know. The one thing I learned from the Republican administration, if I repeat it long enough, it's real. There is a, if it didn't happen, it'll happen. Somewhere you generate reality in the universe, and somewhere there's some poor little bastard dwarf moments away from a hippo's throat.
He's sitting there going, shut up, Lewis. Shut up, Lewis. Shut up, Lewis. I know it's going to be me. I know it's. Do you have any friends with little people?
I've met a few, but I don't really.
Yeah, we have a really good friend, Arturo, in town.
Yes.
Maybe we can get him to, like, pose over Hippo's mouth. Send you the picture.
Well, here's what's the funny. I mean, just the odd, quirky thing about the whole thing with the odd little person. So I've been doing that in the act, and. Because really, it's more about, you know, but to me, it's more about what that kind of news, whether it's real or not. It's just that kind of, you know, the kind of stuff you find that go, you know, that just is so great along those lines. And I'm in Milwaukee at Summerfest, and all of a sudden, I've talked about the dwarf thing for a while, and then, and all of a sudden, I come around the corner, and there are three of them. And then I'm at the hotel that I'm at, and five are coming down the stairs. And now I'm going, I've manifested. Now I'm just manifesting. There was 20 of them, then there was 30. And I'm going, God in heaven, are they, wow, you know? Because I maybe see you, maybe see, I maybe three in a day, maybe. There's a whole city, and it turned out there was a convention. But for a day and a half, and sometimes I drink a little too much, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, this is it. This is where the breakdown is occurring. I remember walking locked in my room. I can't go out. There are too many dwarves.
That's Lewis Black talking about dwarfs and hippopotamuses and Condi Rice. We'll be back right after this. This is Penn Jillette, Michael Goudreau on Free FM. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette. Here with Michael Goudreau on the Free FM, we have aristocrat Lewis Black here. And I was just saying during the break that I have, I think about people at home going, man, Penn Jillette is a hard ass. He busts a guy in the dwarf story. Do you have it on Snopes?
I have it right here. Okay. You want the actual article?
We don't want to say, now you've never said anything on stage that was not the truth, so we want to just correct this.
Yes.
Like the New York Times, except your error box is like minuscule.
Yes.
Few little sentences.
Yes.
Maybe I went a little over the top with a dwarf. Here's what we got.
A hippopotamus has swallowed a dwarf in a circus accident in northern Thailand. Mm-hmm. A dwarf, nicknamed Odd, died when he bounced sideways from a trampoline and was swallowed by a yawning hippopotamus.
Yep.
Apparently Odd's act wasn't that good. Vets on the scene said Hilda the hippo had a gag reflex that automatically caused her to swallow.
That's what gag reflexes are supposed to do.
Yeah.
If only that were true.
Yeah. And it's something else.
Yes, know. Unfortunately, the 1,000-plus spectators continued to applaud wildly until common sense dictated there had been a tragic mistake.
Common sense dictated. So at one point, a dwarf going into the mouth of a hippo is really funny. At another point, common sense dictates that's not.
Exactly. And the other thing is that what's great about it is that that's when you know it's really true.
That's right. That's what you know, true.
You know that the audience would do that. That was spectacular.
They
really?
Couldn't make that up. Police said the trampoline had been sent for forensic analysis.
Let me see. Check those springs.
I don't even have that in my article. That's just great. I'm having
this, this is from Snopes, and this is not true.
Yeah.
But it's great that Snopes is busting that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the thing they're busting.
Yeah, really.
Because that's the top story in the past 2 weeks that hasn't been exactly true.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one to go after. It's, God.
You know, you didn't notice Anderson Cooper talking about that hippo. I also like that the name of the hippo was Hilda the Hippopotamus, and it's in Thailand, where I will guarantee you it is not alliteration in Thailand. Hilda the Hippopotamus. The word for hippopotamus is get the back. And the word for, Hilda's, it's no, I speak Thai.
Both of those started with H, though. You just still did it with H's.
I can't even screw up alliteration. I'm such a radio guy that it's impossible to not do alliteration. And what else could you be talking about at the MGM?
I don't think I'm going to tell you anymore. She's not telling. I can't have a fact checker on my back. Well, you can't really talk about that, Lewis. I'm trying to think what else I've brought over. I've got, I'm going to go back to the thing. I do a lot now about that I keep working on the Old Testament, the New Testament.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the road to, that's really the problem is that the Christian community, the hardcore ones who read the Old Testament and think it's real. And it's really, and they really shouldn't, and the thing I say is it's not their book. Okay? It's the book of my people, the Jewish people. It's our book. And if you really want to know what the book means, ask a Jew. Because there's, all you got to do is watch these guys for thousands of years. They read the Old Testament, it's not their book, and then they come up with nonsense. The seven-day thing, that's a tremendous, tremendous concept. That's always nice for really reality of a child to go to a museum where they see a dinosaur and a man together. That really helps the community as a whole. Gets the kid going into a kind of a... I said, those people are really... The people who believe that dinosaurs and humans live together are... I think you have to... Well, they're insane. And it's not an argument. It's nothing like that. They have to be taken to a place and just talked to for a while because they're watching the Flintstones and they think it's real.
And you're familiar, of course, with Leviticus 14, and God so loved the world he fed a dwarfed with hippopotamus. How do the Jews interpret that? You know, you wouldn't actually literally be true, but it is a parable for which we should live. By little person, they don't mean a dwarf or a little person. They mean those countries that don't have quite the power. And by hippopotamus, of course, they mean refrigerator. You have to analyze this the proper way.
Well, it's spectacular. It's really spectacular. I mean, in this whole thing now with the rapture.
Yeah.
You know, the people that the rapture chat rooms are just a gaga.
The rapture chat rooms?
Yeah.
There You're are going rapture. To rapture chat rooms?
No, I won't go. I'm too busy going on to
What's
the Ken Jennings Jeopardy blog. So it takes up all my time to read his feelings. It's an exhausting day for me.
No, he's upset about something, isn't he?
He was upset about Jeopardy. He wrote a blog about... Who is reading that blog?
I don't know, not me. Do you know anything about it?
I just happened to pick up in the... Well, first off, that he's got a blog is... Because the only way I don't really follow a lot of blogs, so the only way is when you read about it in a newspaper, which is like a real blog! That's a real blog with real people who kind of... That's what they do for a living! And they study it, and it might be considered a craft by some. It's called objective journalism, as objective as it can be, and I know it's too bad that it's not really more objective, but it's the best we can do. So... you've got you got some reading, and it's Ken Jennings is upset about Jeopardy.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's really, it's, you know, that Alex is kind of a pig. You know? and the set's not hip enough, and the music, I mean, it's like the questions.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's
he's
like...
He's talking about the set and the music?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, it's a critical analysis by Ken Jennings.
How much did he win?
A lot. It was like millions.
Hundreds of dollars.
Millions. He won millions. You know, checking on Snopes. I don't have that at my disposal. But he made a chunk, a change there, boy.
Now on the rapture, he paid $2.5 million, it now says in our headphones.
Yeah.
$2.5 million. Now, the rapture that got you going there, have you read any of the Left Behind books?
No, because I am going to be left behind.
Exactly.
So I don't need to know what's going to...
You have a lot of time then.
Yeah, I don't need to know the monkeys coming and, you know, with the winged monkeys from The Wizard of Oz that I'll have to spend time with.
I haven't.
Really?
Because they are, you know, huge bestsellers, and it's one of the books that people are reading so much, I decided to buy one, but I couldn't bring myself to... go in and even let anybody know. So I went to Amazon, and I went to the bottom of Amazon and found the most beat-up, terrible copy that was 25 cents. And then I sat at my computer thinking, it's 25 cents to someone who believes in sanity. Can I really do that? And I just go, wait a minute. I've given a buck to a homeless guy in the street. I can give 25 cents. So I got it, and I opened the first page, and it is just so horrific. And I'm not talking about the content. So I will. Next time we meet, you know,
yes.
I will, in Israel, I will tell you about the Left Behind book. I'm going to read it so you don't have to.
Please do, because I don't think I can do that.
But what else do you think about the rapture? I love talking about the rapture.
Well, I just think it's just kind of, you know, that whenever this stuff starts there, it's the Third World War. I mean, and the thing is, as I've grown older, this is the 50th time I've lived through a big alert in the Mideast.
Yeah.
This is it. This is it. This is the end of time. We are moments away from a total conflagration. You know, we were much closer. God, we were so much closer when I was a kid, and before, you know, you had when Egypt was at war with Israel, and all the countries were at war with Israel, and Russia had nukes, and the U.S. had their nukes, and this war was, you know, was going on between these communities. That to me was much freakier.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is freaky now, but it's not. I don't think it's rapture time. but I prefer to look at it as such, because people, you know, they're all going, it's World War III, and I go, no, it's every time you hear the sound of one of those bombs, it's just Christ's footsteps getting a little closer. You're one of the five people in the world who would laugh as hard as I laughed at it when I thought of it. Oh, there's somebody. Because when I say that on stage, you're going to be able to hear the pin drop.
No, not with me cackling at the screaming monkey. I'm sad to say that has happened a few times. No, we did the Aristocrats. Yeah. The hardest job was pulling out my insane cackling. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to get, you're in a construction site, and you're talking, and you're going on, and we're going through the sound. We had to go syllable by syllable, wow, because you'd say one thing, and I'd go, ah! And then there'd be the jackhammers and the cars,
yeah,
and we're going, ooh, this is a classy movie.
Well, that came out great. I did want to tell you, because we haven't talked really about it since then, and I just thought it came out great.
Yeah, we're really happy with it. It's on HBO. See, when you have people coming up to you and talking about, you know, it's a movie made for kids with helmets, you know, that kind of stuff, and they're quoting stuff that isn't from your act,
yeah,
that's what it's from. It's showing on HBO.
Yeah.
And you get a book out, right?
Yeah.
What's the book?
The book's called Nothing Sacred, mm-hmm, oddly enough, after our whole discussion so far. And I wrote it a year ago in hardback, and now it's in paperback.
Cool, cool, cool. Now, forgive me. I've not read it.
After you do the rapture.
All nine of them.
Seriously, save it. I want you to save it. And I'm going to give it to you. I'll send it to you for a quarter.
Oh, God. Is it like Garland's books? Is it stuff like from your...
No, it's
your
mainly... Act? What I did was... some of the stuff is from my act, and then, you know, but mostly what I try to do was give people... what I was trying to... I started the book, I just want people to know how I ended up with my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's totally, you know, you and I have a point of view that, and even our points of view don't, we coincide on certain places, but both of us have really a different point of view.
There it's was like, that horrible hippie dwarf, dwarf thing, yeah, we had a little bit of a split on.
No, but we have this, but, you know, definitely, we in terms of the general population,
mm-hmm,
and adults, you and I don't fit in.
Right, okay. Exactly.
And
but to the rest of the adults, I bet that if you ask people, do Lewis Black and Pendulette agree, they would say on everything.
Yes, absolutely. And if it would make us some more money, I'd agree to sleep with you. I would go that far. But I think what I try to do is just explain, you know, through how my upbringing got me to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, I was trying to show... especially since this really sounds crazy for me, but again, I got a lot of kids who watch me, and just to try to, and I put pictures of myself in it when I was a kid, just basically to say, you know, this too shall pass.
Yeah. Oh,
you,
wow.
You won't look like a mongoloid your entire life. You won't look like a dump truck in heat. You know, because I don't think people really, and also to try to give this, you don't have to look at it as, you know, that lockstep of authority crap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I was kind of trying to show from the very beginning. You know, this is why I question it.
Well, you know, it sounds, you don't want to get, you know... People like us who make our living being tough don't,
yep,
want to talk about how important that is. But, man, I feel so strongly about the creep kids, you know. When,
yeah,
I was a really creepy kid, I mean, Frank Zappa, Martin Mull, all these,
yeah,
out-of-the-closet atheists,
yeah,
who had these crazy ideas, just got me through my little town. At least you're from Silver Springs. At,
yeah,
least there's stores there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm from, like, a dead factory.
Yeah,
town, you know?
No, yeah, yeah, no, it's true. But even there, but in a sense, even there, it's the opposite because they're all kind of like, you know, I'm happy this is a swell place to live. Isn't this a nice community? Aren't we happy? You know, it's too bad you don't go to church.
Whoa! Oh, what happened to that? What happened to that? Did you mean to do that?
That was great.
Anyway, we'll be back after this, I guess. Was that a mistake? Kind of, sort of. Okay. We'll be back after this. God damn!
Yeah. It was getting a little too sensitive.
Michael Gaudreau, Lewis Black. We've all had nice cold showers. We're feeling better now. That was so good they did that to us because we were getting very sensitive.
We were. I'm
very
so
kind
glad.
Of touchy feeling,
yeah,
you know, like an Eric Carmen moment. We had
it really.
And we were talking and talking about being kids and kind of being left out, outsiders, and how similar Silver Springs was to Greenfield, Massachusetts, and the kids, and we're all in this together. Commercial, you stupid freaks! What the hell's wrong with you? You both can yell, you both can get angry. Get angry, for the love of Christ, or we'll play music over your ass for the rest of your goddamn lives. Get angry, Lewis. What the hell? Yeah, exactly. That's what we'd like to hear.
Perfect.
So, I try to be the jack of all trades, master of none. So I do a radio show, live show, do the Bulls hit show on Showtime, do a lot of other stuff. And you're doing everything, too. You got a book? I got a book, too.
Yeah.
You got a book.
Yeah.
You've got live shows. You're doing movies. What movies you got?
I did. There's a movie comes out August 11th called Accepted, which I play a fake dean at a fake college. And that one has got some nice stuff to it. It's good. So the great thing about that movie is 88 minutes long. And so the best thing is it's over before you know it's bad.
Yeah, okay. You
know, since every movie now is like 3.5 hours long, all of a sudden this, you're going to go, that was great. That was so short, it was great.
Yeah.
But I did a movie that the really an interesting one was with, it was Robin Williams, Christopher Walken, Laura Linney, and me.
That's a lot of crazy in a room.
Yeah, and which one of us isn't like the other? and it was about a it was Barry Levinson, and it's about a guy who has a show. Robin has like a daily show, a comedian who runs to be president. I'm his head writer on the show. I become a speechwriter. Christopher Walken becomes his business manager, becomes his campaign manager.
Okay.
So it's a really, that one is really going to be.
What's it called?
It's called Man of the Year. And that one, I think, and it's coming out around election time, and the way things are going, it might start, it might look, it's like right time, right place. It's one of those things that it may look really even deeper than it is because it'll be around that time when we're dealing with that stuff again. And it's got that wag the dog kind of documentary style feel. And you won't know whether, you know, and you'll leave the theater and you'll be hallucinating.
Now, I don't know about your background, and there's no way I would care unless I was on the radio and being paid to.
Exactly.
But you're going into acting. Do you have an acting background at all?
I have. I was in a theater major.
Oh, were you? So you got to comedy.
This is a part of my gay outreach program. It was my beginning of my gay outreach. Who knew? That's how dumb I was. Really, gays? Wow. They dress up. Music. Wow. I majored in theater. I got into theater when I was young. I went to the University of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They had a theater program. I arrived at the University of North Carolina 2 weeks later. The head of the department dropped dead. I said, wow, doesn't bode well for the next few years. And then I went to the Yale School of Drama.
So you were like, when you first went to college, were you like singing in Pippin and stuff?
No, I was not that fruit swar.
Okay.
And if you ever see me at any point, as things roll around and in the twilight of my career, if you see me singing in a roadshow of Pippin, I want you to come out of the audience and with your hands, just kill me. Just choke me until you have the right to do that.
You know, you're asking me to, it's 6 minutes, you know, to kill somebody.
That's fine.
Don't believe this TV stuff. It's not like you hold someone's neck and they're gone just like that. You have to cut off air for about 6 minutes.
Unless
it's David Blaine, then it's 6 minutes, 15 seconds.
Then get a garrote
or something?
No, yeah, or a scimitar, something just it's done.
You'd be like the bull in Apocalypse.
Yeah, you know, whatever that song, and I can't even think of the song from Pippin, so thank God. If I started launching into it now, it would have been really funny, and then so he's gone. Oh, Bobby, the blood! I wanted to write plays, and so I kind of did, and I wasn't really comfortable on stage.
But now you are.
Now I'm very comfortable.
Very comfortable.
Now
I mean, to call a guy trembling and flop sweating comfortable, you certainly are. Louis Black just said he's now comfortable. I say. So before, what were you doing? You were actually soiling your pants.
It's frightening. I used to do a thing where it became a bit where I'd light a cigarette on stage, and it took 7 minutes. And the audience would go to complete silence. And I should have. It was like the hand would be out here and the thing. And I would talk to them about how the fact that, you know, that it may be upsetting to them, but it's my body.
Now, have you quit smoking?
No.
No. You're still smoking all the time?
Not all the time, but I've smoked. I'm reading a book that I'm hoping ends it all.
So you're trying to quit?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I'm trying to find the one person who just smokes and is happy with it. You know?
Yeah.
I was hoping you might be that. I just said,
I've been that way for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then, but now it's like at the point, I mean, now, you know, we've gotten away with murder, so let's, let's quit while we're ahead. You know? It's like my friends who used to smoke who go, you know, when I hit 75, I'm buying the cigarettes again. So I figure I came on this side of it, and it's high time. So.
Uh-huh. Is it tough for you to quit?
Yeah.
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 Have you tried before?
I've quit for 4 years.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
And, that's an odd definition of quit, but okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But for me, it was quit.
You took a break.
I took a break. It was weird. And then all of a sudden, I went on tour with Attell and Mitch Hedberg.
Uh-huh.
And literally everybody on that tour smoked. And it was like surrounded by smoke.
So the man who just said, I want kids to be themselves and, you know, and just do what they do and go, just is they an absolute pawn to peer pressure? All the other comics smoke.
Oh, no. I was not a pawn. I didn't care. Mine was, I was a pawn to a filthy, stinking, addictive habit. They could have been trained monkeys.
Okay.
They could have been from another, actually, species. And I would have felt maybe other species pressure. No, this was just like, I didn't get to do my heroin this afternoon kind of pressure.
So you were king of the world. You get to change one thing in the world. What is it, Lewis?
Ooh.
Huh? What would make you so you go up on stage and just do Donovan's act? What would solve everything for you?
Wow. I mean, in the immediate would be if I could go back to right before that Iraq, if we could just did not have walked into Iraq.
Uh-huh.
That just would be...
Not have that happen at all.
Not have that happen at all.
You know,
I believe that...
John Kerry just said, if he was president, that wouldn't have happened. And my answer to that was, were! If you were president!
Yeah, exactly.
Not if you was president! Jesus Christ! No wonder you didn't win!
Yeah, exactly.
The only person on the planet that could lose to Bush, they ran him.
I know. I said it was the guy, the line I used was, I said they found a... I said it was like finding a... normal person who would lose in the Special Olympics.
Yes.
But that's true. It's like, but that to me is the moment in time, because in terms of...
What's happening now?
Because the thing was, is because they were using that, it's so difficult to explain to people. They're using that terrorist thing, beating people over the head with the terrorism. And he's got those weapons of mass destruction. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the what you can't get through to people is where there was no, there was just we didn't have the money to do this. That was it. It was purely and simple. You know, there's other ways to argue.
Well, it's also not. We didn't have the will to do it.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of going to war, but we don't want to hurt anybody. Then you don't go to war. This idea of, you know, we don't want to get people too upset. It's that whole thing of you got to do one or the other. It's the same as Vietnam, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost like it doesn't matter which one you pick, but you got to pick one somewhere in the middle. So you're going to be. I'm wrapping up now. You
heard something? Really?
That hour
went so quickly.
I just don't want the music to scare us off our asses again.
Yeah.
So get ready. Got to get your hands in a flat position. I'm going to get yourself so you don't punch yourself in the face with the music at us. We got Lewis Black. He's over. He's here in town, in our town, in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he's going to be at the MGM.
Yep.
And you'll be there through Wednesday. One show a night?
One show a night.
Oh, you wimp.
No.
Lewis Black, one of the aristocrats. Always a joy, like we had him on the show before. Pick up his book, buy his movies, do everything you can. We'll be back tomorrow with Monkey Tuesday!